Quick note before we get to the rest of the show. There is supposed to be a Lonzo Ball injury report or update on the way later this evening. The Lakers like to do this right before or right while the TNT games are going on so that everybody's attention is elsewhere. But Lonzo Ball probably won't be back for a little while still. Mike Trudell got video of him shooting, and he was barely able to jump. So we're probably still a couple weeks out from Lonzo returning. So Pete and I just said we were going to record this earlier this afternoon. Enjoy the show. Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, last night, it was kind of refreshing to watch people who cared.
Yeah, man. Like, I'd forgotten what that looked like.
It was crazy how stark a contrast it was between, like, Alex Caruso caring enough to stay in front of Gary Harris versus Rajon Rondo in his first possession getting onto the court late in the fourth quarter. He just stood there and let Gary Harris go right by him. Like, it was cool to be able to see that in the same game.
I can't believe they put Rondo back in that game, especially with, like, the spirit of... Yeah. I've thought this on several occasions, because I think Luke knows that he's gone, right? Yeah. And I've thought on several occasions recently that Luke is trolling us, whether it's post-game comments or just things that he's doing with the rotation and, you know, him talking about, like, we're still trying to win games. Like, I get it. It's coach speak. No coach is ever going to say we're going to tank. But just some of the stuff that he's said and done, it's like, this dude has two middle fingers in the air right now and is just like, screw you guys, I'm going home, you know?
I wish Luke would have joined Rondo at the end of that game. Like, just if you're
sat a few seats down, yeah. There was room.
If you're going to join, like, if you're going to, you know, troll everybody, really lean into it. Take some notes. Luke, if you're looking for somebody who knows how to troll people, it's one of the few things I'm all right at. But yeah, he should have. How do you feel about that Rondo thing? I think he should have been cut, like, immediately after the game.
Yeah, now he mentioned that he'd done it maybe 8 to 10 times. I know he did it in the Indiana game, and there was, I mean, you know, LeBron was sitting way away from his teammates, and that was the first, like, post AD rumors game that was like, oh, this is bad. Yeah. This is going really badly.
They lost
right
by 42.
So for whatever reason, that did not, like, ping on my radar as hard as it should have been, just because there were other things that were taking precedent. I agree. I thought Rondo should have been cut today. And that is, like, AAU summer tournament type stuff. Like, going to sit in. It's just so disrespectful to the franchise, to the coaching staff, and the whole, like, I don't see what the big deal is. I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah.
You know? Like, come on. It's not even like he was sitting with someone, right? You know, like, I think in the Indiana game, some of his family was there. Not that that's okay, right? Mm-hmm. But, like,
he was like a seat away from Marco Nunez.
Right. It's just unacceptable. It's infuriating. It's indicative of larger issues with the franchise and all of that. And I would have loved to see, I don't know, man, like, the leadership of this team right now feels super absent.
And he's touted as this leader.
I don't just mean the players. I mean, like, upper management, a move like cutting him or just sending the message that this isn't acceptable. Ronald's not going to be on the team next year, but it's just a matter of, like, this is who we are. This is what we do. This is how we act. And it's just like, it's free for all at this point.
I took him being on the roster still today and not even being fined. Like, there was no, apparently, I think John Ireland said on ESPN that Magic and Pelinka spoke to Rondo or something like that, right? And it's like, okay, let's just imagine Lonzo does this.
Oh, God.
Like, let's just imagine Ingram does this. They're fined, probably. Maybe they don't play the first half of the next game or something like. But something happens. It's a conversation after the game, and especially if it's Lonzo, it's something that we talk about for the week to come, right? And this idea, like, Rajon Rondo going out there and people buying into this idea that it's no big deal. If it wasn't a big deal, we would see it more often.
Right. No, it's not normal. Stop, let's stop like playing. Stop BSing us.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm so frustrated and such a helpless feeling just with so many elements of the franchise. And I've got to work beyond that frustration, especially to provide content for people. Like this is a difficult job to have right now, man. Like it's great, right? We wouldn't trade this for the world, but we're so immersed in the Lakers that when they're so poisonous and toxic like this, it's like, this is not good for my mental health. But
what it does is. So my thing, I've always kind of stood by in analyzing the Lakers or analyzing anything, period. Whether I'm having a conversation with a boss, whether I'm having a conversation with you about the Lakers, the one thing I will not abide by is being made to feel like I'm an idiot.
Yes.
You know, like if you have an explanation. So, for example, there was a conversation, there was a back and forth about the logos with Locked On Lakers, right? And there were two iterations of the logo, and myself and Carl Weinstein, who is the COO of Locked On Network, he and I had a back and forth. I preferred one version, he preferred another version, but he explained to me why it was that we are going with in this direction, and he made it really clear to me, and he didn't insult my intelligence. He actually understood my argument, took it in, and explained to me why we're going in that other direction, and I'm perfectly fine with it.
That's leadership.
Okay with it. I walked away from that conversation. I told him, I even thanked him. I said, hey, man, I appreciate you hearing me out, and I appreciate you offering me this reason why we're going in this other direction. And we moved on.
grown-ups. Yes.
We have this thing, and I'm going to continue to do my job just in the same way I would always have done it, right? And I walk away from that conversation with Carl, and I say to myself, that guy gets it. That guy understands how to treat human beings. And like when I hear Rajon Rondo going out there and saying, no, it's no big deal, I'm like, it very obviously is. Right. And it is in a vacuum. It's even worse when you consider what one of the few priorities that the Lakers have moving forward right now is to build culture, to have this foundational thing to move forward with. But
what would he care about that? You know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing. I guess to him, it isn't a big deal. And that's what I wrote when I wrote about it for Silver Screen Today. It might not be a big deal for Rajon Rondo. It very obviously isn't a big deal for Rajon Rondo. But the fact that it isn't a big deal to Rajon Rondo tells me that that dude shouldn't be a freaking Laker right now.
Amen.
All right. What we're going to do, though, we're going to move on from that. And again, shouts to the guys who did battle last night. Those guys deserve as much praise as they're getting, and I hope more opportunity as the season goes along. Chris Haynes, I believe, of Yahoo Sports just announced or just reported that the Lakers are going to be playing LeBron James on a minutes restriction. So there's going to be more opportunity to go around. I don't really know what to do with that right now. That was probably where this was going all along. Mm-hmm. But what we're going to do for segments 2 and 3 of the show is we're going to talk about we've talked at length about how the Lakers got here. But what I want to talk about in the next couple segments, and this was Pete, this was your idea, so if it fails miserably, it's on you.
I love when you do this, by the way. This is when you don't think my idea is good, right?
No, it's
was Pete's idea. Just ahead of time, letting everyone know.
This is me being annoyed at myself that I didn't come up with the idea. It's really good.
Right.
but what we're going to talk about is what this front office, what this organization can learn from the mistakes that they've made this year and how they can move forward accordingly. And Pete, you made a good point that we're going to lead with in this next segment after we pay a couple bills. So as you put it, Pete, the Lakers, with everything that has gone wrong, and there's a litany of things that have gone wrong, but with everything that has gone wrong, at the very least, they being the Lakers, have, again, a clean slate to be able to build this upcoming summer. There is no huge mistake that can't be undone, right? There is no Luol Deng contract. There is no Timofey Mozgov contract. And, you know, if you're going to have a bunch of money extending beyond the season, if that's going to LeBron James, you kind of live with that, right? So what would you say if the Lakers are to learn something from this? If you can go wide scope, you can narrow it down to a couple entities, however you want to take this. But what do you think is the number one lesson that they have to learn from and adjust to moving forward?
The number one thing is a roster construction issue with the Lakers' lack of spacing. Rondo and Lance have both shot pretty well, but teams don't respect them, and the Lakers have too many players that you don't respect on their jumper. I've been thinking about this. If I can try and go and fill your lane a little bit with the tortured analogy.
I can't wait.
So you know how like in video games, whether it's 2K or like Skyrim was the last non-sports game I was really into, mm-hmm. where you have a character that you build up by accomplishing certain things, and then you get a couple of points that you can assign to different aspects of that character, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's ball handling, shooting ability, and you know, and in other games, different sword categories. Fighting. So let's say that like a defense has 100 attention points to give an offense, right? Mm-hmm. So there's five guys, you get average 20 attention points that they give to the average player, right? When guys like Rondo are on the perimeter, or even Lance, right? You know,
despite how well he shot,
or despite how well both of them have shot from mm-hmm. a percentage perspective, if you've got LeBron on the court and they're next to LeBron, how many attention points are you giving Rondo or Lance versus a guy like LeBron, right? Like you're going to allocate more of your attention points toward LeBron. And if Rondo knocks down an open three from time to time, you live with that because mm-hmm. You're going to take that away. So from a roster construction standpoint, funny enough, the biggest spacing differential is at the five spot between Lopez and JaVale. And we've talked about that a lot. But overall, the Lakers have too many guys that you can divert attention points from mm-hmm. on the perimeter. And that makes your drivers, particularly LeBron and Brandon Ingram, that makes their lives way harder as a result. It's true of Lonzo as well, who thrived really with like a pick and pop big and like TJ Leaf. Him and Brook Lopez had a nice chemistry last year, too. So that there's that on one hand, and then there's the cultural elements. We got to stop the 1 year stuff, regardless of what happens this summer. If they have to fill out the roster with sensible long-term deal and, you know, 3 year deals, just guys who are not checked out the way that guys are mentally
2 year right now. With a player option type of deal.
Sure.
Yeah.
And whether it's your room exception or you're using some of the cap space for that. So, those are the two primary things that I think that they can learn going forward. What do you think that they can kind of take from this? And because, like you said, we kind of get a do-over going forward, right? Like there isn't a Mozgov, there isn't a Deng on the books, so their mistakes can be corrected if they learn from it.
Yeah, and none of the kids, I don't believe, have to be paid this year.
No, Brandon's the first one up, and that's after next season.
Yeah, so they still have the utmost flexibility. I completely agree with you. I would actually widen my scope a little bit, not just to the specific roster construct of this year, but to me, what I find to be the top thing that I want Polinka and I want Magic to learn from is themselves. I want them to recognize the holes in their own game here. It's like with to continue your analogy, right? If I know the character that I'm creating on 2K is, you know, if I start because you get to start with some type of player type in every one of these years, right? You can be an athletic wing, you can be a spot up shooter, you can be a distributing point guard, right? And if I'm given those, if I start with those kinds of constructs. And I recognize that, you know, maybe in the first couple seasons, my guy isn't going to, if I'm just a distributing point guard who wasn't a shooting threat, I'm going to focus on making my guy better at those things, or I'm going to focus on evening out those scales and upping the skills that I wasn't given initially, right? And for Magic and Polinka, what they both need to realize here, and I think Magic most of all, is he needs to recognize, okay, I'm not going to be around the organization on a daily basis. I have to learn how better to delegate and trust those people I delegate those tasks to. For Pelinka, I come from a negotiating background when I'm negotiating for a client. And often because of the type of clients that he had from a position of strength, right? When he was negotiating on Kobe's behalf, it was pretty straightforward, right? It was my guy deserves the max, right? And so if I was Pelinka, I'd focus on how do I negotiate when I don't have that position of strength? How do I recognize not having that position of strength? And from there, either bring in people around me who can help lift me up, or spend time and talking to people on figuring out how to get better at those things. But until they recognize that they have holes in their game, which I'm not positive.
Yeah, that was the point that I was going to make.
Yeah, I'm not positive Magic can. I'm not positive Magic can. But until he identifies those points, all of this is for naught. You know, all of this is the Lakers might wind up being screwed anyway. How would you, if you had something that you know in the Lakers organization, a shortcoming that they need to address in some way, shape, or form, is it experience? Is it non-insulated thinking? Like where would you start there?
It's humility or the lack thereof.
Yeah,
like the approach that the Lakers have is they think they know better than the rest of the basketball world.
Because they're the Lakers.
And the problem is, where that comes from, is because once upon a time, they did.
Mm-hmm.
You had the best owner in the sport in Jerry Buss. You had the best GM in the sport in Jerry West. And you had two of the greatest coaches of all time in Phil Jackson and Pat Riley.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a time where that swagger that the Lakers had and that I do know better than you was warranted. The problem is that that's been inherited. And that's not something like accomplishments aren't inherited. That's something that your parents did, that Jerry Buss did, that Jerry West, that your predecessors do. That doesn't get transferred onto the new people that are doing, even if you share the same last name. And the utter lack of analytics, schmanalytics, right? Yeah. And I do think that to some extent analytics are probably overrated a little bit by our type.
I was thinking about this yesterday. I think they're a little overrated, but to think they're not important is another thing altogether.
I think that's true for like 25 teams, meaning that there's a certain baseline understanding of this is how you maximize basketball. And then there are some teams that do a little, you know, some very minor things a little bit better than the others. But the difference between like the second best team and the 24th best team in that respect is not that much. But there are also probably five-ish teams where they don't hit that baseline and they do some major things, whether it's the roster construction of, oh, you know, we don't need shooters, that's the Warriors game type stuff, or, you know, spacing issues that come from that. Some of the stuff that Luke has done offensively, for example, he'll put Rondo in the dunker spot right next to the lane, or he uses that spot interchangeably, and then that kind of diverts some attention points because it's like you're not going to be worried about someone dumping the ball off to Rondo and he can raise up and yam on someone, right? So it's both coaching and roster construction. There are probably like five teams in the NBA that don't even hit that baseline where they're like, you don't have to be like the greatest analytics team in the NBA. Just don't be absolutely awful at it. Hit a certain baseline, and the Lakers don't. So just a certain humility that like you don't know better than all of these other people who are grinding and all of the rest of the intelligent people in the NBA, and like get to work and start to understand these things and or hire people that already do to be your support staff.
It's funny that you use Phil Jackson as an example here. Would this current Lakers front office hire Phil Jackson? Not current Phil Jackson with all the baggage and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But
I think they would.
Huh?
You don't think they would?
So Eric Spoelstra's contract, I think he has an out, or Greg Popovich, I think, has an out, right? wouldn't the equivalent of hiring Greg Popovich right now, wouldn't that have been hiring Phil Jackson back then? Where they just threw a ton of money at him. And they said, come on over, right? Like the comparison's right there, and they would never do it. I could never see them doing it.
I think they would, that because my impression is that they're very like name based, mm-hmm. meaning that they're going to go after guys of big name. Like if Popovich is available, like I think you have to go after him. I think they're, you know, people would run. I also think that Popovich would probably murder some people with their bare hands or turn down the deal altogether, right? To not be associated. Because part of why San Antonio is able, and you know, they're a first round exit type of team, but they've been able to maintain for so long because they're on the opposite end of the Lakers culturally, mm-hmm. and they have the most defined set of parameters of this is how we do things in the NBA. And Popovich would have to install that. I don't know if he'd want to do that at the age of 70 in a new organization.
Yeah.
You know, especially with the immediate pressures of having LeBron. There are a lot of reasons for LeBron or for Popovich to not want that. But I do think the Lakers would pursue him because he's the biggest name. And he's still arguably the best coach in the game.
Yeah. Well, the reason, like, when they did that, you know, with Phil Jackson back in the day, yes, it was a big name. And I agree with you. That's a really good counterpoint to mine. But it still just comes back to there are things that the Lakers won't do. And to me, I just think, given the state of the organization right now, there should not be anything off of the table that might help the franchise. And that there might not be. That there are directions that the Lakers might not go in. That concerns me. And that comes from that hubris of, oh, well, the Lakers, we will only go so far. We have pride to come back to. We have to stick in the family, in the Laker family, to have this success. And that type of conceitedness is so damning. It's so damning because it's so undeserved right now.
Yeah, it's not based on anything. Like,
yeah.
Magic Johnson was a great basketball player. Rob Pelinka was a great agent. You know, there are the people that are in the positions of power, like their confidence is built on accomplishments in entirely different areas than what they're in right now. And I don't think they recognize that. And that's the very first step. Like, if these guys are capable of self-examination and being able to be critical of themselves, we're going to be okay. If they fire Luke Walton and dust their hands off and say, all right, problem solved now, we're in big trouble.
Yeah. They're driving a 2002 big body Benz with like 165,000 miles on it. And they're acting as if, well, it's still a Benz. You know, they can't keep doing that. We're going to come back, though, and continue down our list of things, lessons that the Lakers need to learn so that they can move forward and adjust to the lessons that have been taught in a big way and a hard way this last year. All right, so I want to build off of your point in terms of the roster construction, and I'm just going to make my point really quickly and see what you think of it. A lot of my problem with the way that the roster was built this year was that you have guys who just flat out cannot play with each other, and that's not unique to the Lakers. Every roster has combinations that are better or worse than others, right? But the Lakers have them throughout their rotation, where Rajon Rondo and LeBron James probably should never play together. Rajon Rondo and Lance Stephenson probably shouldn't play together. Brandon Ingram and LeBron James had significant struggles earlier on in the year. And you just kind of JaVale McGee and Zubats, Lance Stevenson and Ron, like it's just you go down this line, and there's a ton of skill sets here that were not particularly complementary. And I think one of the things that they need to identify is, okay, this is what we have in house. How do we either make those skill sets better or fill in the holes that are left behind by the skill sets that we have already on the roster?
I agree with that. And what makes that particularly frustrating is that you have your centerpiece of who to build around. You kind of need like a main guy mm-hmm. of which everybody else orbits around and their skill sets complement him, right, as the primary mm-hmm. guy that you look to build around. And there's a well-established template for what works around him over the course of a decade and a half. And then went away from it, right? That's part of the lack of humility that I was yeah. talking about the other, like, oh yeah, LeBron's been, you know, 8 straight finals with this type of team, but yeah. No, we know better.
You see
we
that wheel better. Over there? We're going to make yeah. it an octagon.
Yeah, that's basically it. So, you know, like Rondo and LeBron together are like a -5 or so per 100 possessions. Like, mm-hmm. how do you have a negative rating with LeBron James on the court?
Like a negative, you know, how hard 62 that is to do? Net positive this year, or net negative.
Right. Yeah. Good yeah. Lord. And like that's really hard to do on the court with LeBron at the same time. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's the only guy who's played significant minutes who fits that description of being a negative.
Tom Haberstroh, that was his big number. And yeah, that he's the only Laker who is in the negative.
And so that's a roster construction issue. And then it's coaching issue too, is if you are going to have Rondo and LeBron out there together, Rondo has to be the point guard and LeBron needs to be his pick and roll partner, his big, right? Mm-hmm. Rondo's value, what he has, is as a ball in his hands type of point guard. If you have LeBron James with the ball at the top of the key, as he often is, and LeBron and Rondo standing on the wing, then you start getting into that attention points thing that I was talking about earlier. And Rondo's value absolutely plummets. So it's both on the coaching staff and on the front office. But yeah, there was not – like, I want to see guys who have motor and can shoot mm-hmm. surrounding LeBron James. Like, one of the things from watching, you know, Jonathan Williams and Josh Hart and Caruso, Wagner, those guys really get after it, is it's not fair to ask LeBron to be the motor of the team.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, which doesn't mean he's not the center of
the team. Yeah, he's not the engine, but he's not the motor. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, you need other guys to be able to provide that and let LeBron be brilliant at what LeBron does. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have something that works, because LeBron isn't going to be able to do that for 82 games, especially at this point in his career. He can't be the energy guy and the guy that your offense is built around.
Yeah. I guess a better analogy would be like on a sailboat, expecting LeBron to be the wind and the rudder just is too much.
Yeah. Yeah. Perfect.
I would say I completely agree with that. And I don't think, like, do you think those types of players, the rudder and shoe guys, are tough to find? I don't think they're all that tough. That's all, like, if I was a dad and my kid had a chance of being in the NBA, the best way to get him to the NBA is to teach him how to shoot and give him and make him run marathons.
Right. Yeah. Just keep going and space the floor. Like, it's not like we're not inventing the concept of a 3-and-D guy.
Yeah.
Like, holy crap, this is from a decade ago. Like, we started being like, oh yeah, these guys have value around, like, just feels like we're so behind, man.
It does. It does. Is there any other, so far we have, you know what? You had this point, and I want to make sure it gets into the show. But understand what competition looks like. Understanding what it means to actually compete, because we heard Pelinka and Magic talk at length about how it's all going to be about competition, and at the end of the day, whoever wins those competitions is going to represent us, and blah 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 blah, which makes a lot of sense on its face, right? But that's not necessarily how it turned out. So sum up to me, and sum up to everybody, what do you think that the Lakers have to look for, and what competition actually looks like?
I think there's a baseline hunger, and I think that, again, the arrogance of the front office. When you heard Magic talk about why he put together the team that he did, he very much did it through a lens of what we need to do to beat the Warriors. And I actually still believe that if the Lakers were in a playoff series, that a guy like Rondo would show up, a guy like Lance, like, just from a I'm going to compete type of standpoint. Mm-hmm. That's not the same thing as being internally motivated to always do that. Yeah. Like, guys like Caruso or Jonathan Williams, even Hart, even though Hart is on a guaranteed contract, all of those guys are kind of playing for their NBA lives, whether it's for their first, like, real contract in the case of Williams and Caruso, or in trying to get their second contract, I believe that if you were to play Josh Hart on, you know, in a pickup game, he's gonna try, I think it's an internal thing with a guy like Hart. Like, that's who he is. He's gonna try and bust your ass no matter what. And that to me is what a competitor is. I people complain about Luke Walton. I'm one of them, and he deserves a lot of the criticism. But anybody who's not competing because they don't like the position that Luke Walton's put them in or anything about the Lakers organization, that's on you. That's loser talk, and that's quitter talk right there, because people who are really about it, they're going to persevere regardless of what the outside circumstances are, because it's meaningful to them. It's part of their own identity. And these guys, the difference between those guys and the younger guys is Rondo's set for life, man.
Yeah.
JaVale McGee's gotten a big contract. Lance has gotten paid. Like, these dudes are older. It's not, even if it's not internally motivated, they don't even have that external motivation of, I have a chance to make a lot of money in the NBA, because they've already done that, right?
Yeah.
So even if it's younger guys that, just to fill out the roster, the end of your bench shouldn't be guys who have already gotten paid in the NBA and just really aren't that good anymore. Because when times get tough, they're not going to show up. And that's what we saw happen this year.
I want to read to you a quote from Alex Caruso that I think completely sums this up. And I'm writing about this right now for Silver Screen. Caruso, quote, "Nothing changes if I get put into the rotation. If I'm out there with J3, Mo, Isaac, or I'm out there with B.I., Kuz, JaVale, I'm going to play as hard as I can, space the floor, and be ready to shoot when I get the ball. Just be aggressive and guard as hard as I can. Rebound and be a good teammate. Those are things that got me here, and those are the things that are going to carry me to the next level." I just don't – do you see JaVale McGee offering up that quote?
Of course not.
I don't even see Rondo. His actions don't offer up those quote, that type of a quote. KCP over the last 2 years has made, what, $21 million? He's cool, man. He's great.
Right.
Yeah. I completely agree with that. And again, it just comes back to me of like the politician aspect of what annoys me with Pelinka sometimes when I hear him speak, is it comes off as a very idealistic view on life that he isn't willing to work to actually make those promises come true, right? It's great to say the Lakers are, we're going to reinvigorate the Lakers culture, and we're going to do everything that we can to catch back up to the modern NBA, and we're going to bring the Lakers back to the promised land that our Laker fans deserve. But until you actually put in that actual work, I don't need to hear about it.
There's no substitute for it either. You can't fake it. You can't pretend it. That catches up to you, like, whether you like it or not. You can talk all about it, but you got to be about it.
Exactly. Is there any other lessons here that you want to get off before we?
Nah, man, we're gonna have plenty of time.
I agree.
Plenty of time in a very long off season.
I agree. I want to really quickly though, because we talked a lot about Rajon Rondo to start the show, and then I just praised Alex Caruso there. But I think you and I are both on the same page here when it comes to guys we want to watch for the rest of the season, right?
Yeah, man. Like, bench the vets and play these dudes. Like, I don't think it's going to happen, and I'm fine with LeBron being on a minutes restriction and not playing back-to-backs, things like that. Like, I want Brandon to come back. I want Kuzma to come back. I want Lonzo to come back. I want there to be some sort of competitiveness going into the offseason, some sort of semblance of culture, so that next year when times get tough, they don't just completely fall apart again. Yeah. Because times are going to get tough at any point of the season. Even if you win an NBA title, things are going to get really difficult at some point. And I don't think that's how it's going to go. I think guys are going to be shelved. And I just don't like the culture that's being built.
Yeah, I hope we're wrong, and that's always what we say here, right? If we criticize, we hope we're wrong. We hope that they prove us wrong. We hope that at the end of the day, the concerns that we have are overblown as they get addressed, right? But to this point, that has not been the case. That to this point, those things that we were screaming and yelling and hollering about and being called Laker haters about, like, those things have kind of come to fruition. And fortunately, though, they've come to fruition. And the point of the show is to say that those things went as poorly as they could have, and yet the Lakers still have a great opportunity in front of them. And so long as they learn these lessons that we talked about, that's the best way that to ensure that those mistakes don't get made again. And I really honestly think that it all starts at the top. with humility and understanding where hubris got them, because this season was ugly and they have to be able to walk away and recognize, first see the egg on their face and then wipe it off.
Yeah. Let's hope. I'm not confident. You know, and that's where I'm at. I'll leave it this.
Yeah.
I am in a prove it to me place.
Yeah.
They no longer have the benefit of my doubt.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And that doesn't make you a bad Laker fan. That doesn't change your abilities as, like, A, it shouldn't matter to anybody that they are, like, a quote, the best Laker fan. It's always been a weird concept to me. But this idea that, like, that fans of sports teams should just always be rah-rah, no matter how things are going, right? I support my team when they're down. I support them when they're up. Okay, but what if they're stupid and they're repeatedly stupid? Am I allowed to point to them being stupid? Because, like, this was gestures broadly at how the season goes. Like, those things that we were concerned about and that mentality that you and I both share right now of, like, no, you guys got to prove it to me before I'm willing to just rep you whether you're up or down or whatever the concept there is. Like, that to me is just being a smart human being.
Sometimes part of true love, and I feel like I have a true love for the Lakers, and I know you do, and a lot of our listeners do. Sometimes true love means speaking up and not standing. Like, the thing is like, I love the Lakers, and I love them as an idea. I love them as a history and as experiences that I've been through, as a community, everything that they stand for, everything community that especially. They've been through. Yeah, and no one person, like, dude, it breaks my heart to talk about Magic Johnson like this.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't think people, I'm 38 years old. I'm going to be 39 in a couple of months, right? So I was born in 1980. My dad worked for the team, for the TV station that covered the team between like 84 and 87 or so. So this is prime Showtime Lakers. Mm-hmm. My first memories are very much filled with the sound of Chick Hearn's voice and Magic Johnson leading a fast break. So the idea of, like, being so frustrated at Magic Johnson and being so disappointed in him is absolutely heartbreaking for me in a way that I hope people who are a little younger than I am can understand. Like, imagine the greatest thing I could put, like, analogy I could make is, like, imagine Kobe got this job and Kobe was bad at it.
Yeah.
And you were mad at friggin' Kobe.
And borderline apathetic.
Right. Right. And yeah, live tweeting the Oscars instead of like, and then being absent, like, where is Magic during all of this? Mm-hmm. Where, like, he's absent. And so it's absolutely heartbreaking, but nobody, if Magic Johnson doesn't rise to the level of being beyond reproach for me, nobody's going to, because I want what's best for the Lakers. And sometimes true love means speaking up for that and be like, no, we're not accepting this.
Yeah, I completely agree. And yeah, I can't say it any better. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. That'll do it for this week of the Locked On Lakers podcast. So make sure you guys get your questions in for over the weekend, that Sunday mailbag. I might have to start breaking that up into two shows, especially as we go through the season and we're analyzing the fourth game in a row of Rajon Rondo sitting with 2 Chainz Sun. But what I'm going to do, though, is, and I've been saying this all season long, if you have a question for both Pete and I, make sure you specify that. And maybe on the occasional Wednesday show, I will throw some of those questions to Pete, and Pete and I will have something more to talk about there. We enjoy talking to you guys in this way that we can. So we'll get that together. And yeah, have a great rest of your weekend. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you on Monday.